Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. This is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Hey, it's a tornado. John Pennydale.
We got another combat sports show. Fighting News, another combat sports show. No guest tonight. Couldn't get it done. I was too busy trying to get Antonio Tarver, and it turns out we'll be next week. So.
Yeah. That's going to be an awesome show. As you know, Rich, I've been trying to get Todd on the show here for a couple of years now. And what I think is going to be cool about that is I've never met Antonio, but it's I got like a lot of things to discuss. I mean, we can talk about the guy's career, which is like he's on track to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, big wins over Roy Jones, Glenn Johnson. You know, he's fought great other fighters, Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins, you know, a virtual who's a former Olympian back in the 1996 team. What?
He was Mason Dixon, too. You can't forget that, right?
Well, yeah. But, like I said, I've never had the chance to meet him, but at the same time, you know, when he was in the Olympics, who was one of the team managers? My college boxing coach, Dr. Ken Cox. Where did Tarver start his pro career? Boxing at the Philadelphia Blue Horizon. And my dad worked in corners the one night, was in the same locker room as him. And said, you know, nice guy, very personable, you know, very friendly. And then, of course, then we had the Rocky movie, which, like I said, I was an extra and I had a chance for a reading part. And, you know, I remember about, you know, filming that. And Sly had this brilliant idea, and I even watched it on, you know, some scenes. They were really going to, had one scene where Tarver was kind of, you know, slipping the punches and rolling with him. And then Sly's going like, oh, he's a real lefty, all after, and he's like slipping the punches. I'm really taking him. Okay, well, that's your own dumb fault, you know, for one. This I think Tarver clocked with a right hook and drop Sly. So you know, definitely want to ask him about that. It's just, you know, it's all really cool things. And here's another one. You know, just, here's how funny like things work in a circular way. Antonio started his career at fighting in Philadelphia, the Blue Horizon, a couple times. One of the cards that he fought on, it was a pretty big upset, light heavyweight fight, and it was super middleweight. Outside of that, I mean, Joseph Chumanuka was fell into the fight, and when Chumanuka was fighting, my dad said, I saw him on the set, he's sitting there with his head down, and God, that I trained with him, even Gerald Nobles, who was that, you know, prospect at the time, but he was just out there, you know, talking to him and and everything, and it was a scenario like the part of Harold Nobles, later, is the lead undercard fight of Tarver's knockout win over Roy Jones. I'm like, it's funny how these things work out.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting interview for sure. We got, like I said, no guests tonight, but we got a lot to cover. A lot of boxing, MMA, the works. I don't know if you saw any of the fights over the weekend. Really wasn't all that much, but...
Yeah, I caught a little bit on the... I guess it was... one of the cards had like an afternoon show, I guess because it was over in China.
Right.
And so I really didn't see much of that. And Saturday night, I was crashing a wedding Saturday night. I was doing the Vince Vaughn, Ellen Wilson wedding crasher routine.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, you know, I try to be interesting. I can't help it.
Well, we had a lot of news come through today. Actually, the big story is... Alexander Gustafsson got hurt, so it's like John Jones is going to be facing Daniel Cormier instead of Gustafsson at UFC 178, which is, I think, the fight he wanted anyway, and those two hate each other more than finally signed with the fight Chris Algieri. I think we talked a little bit about that last week.
Yeah, the fight in Macau, China. I don't think I'll be going to this one personally. Like the last Pacquiao fight. Macau might just be a little too much.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Here's an interesting story. You ever been at an event or volunteered for putting on one of those inflatable sumo suits?
You know what? No, I've never worn one of those. I was at an event at Lock Haven where they had them. I did not don one, but I've seen other people wear them.
I've got video footage somewhere, I think, of sumo suit wrestling from MMA event where they did it, and they let people come right into the cage from the audience. I thought it was a great idea. But apparently, it can be dangerous. There's actually been at least one lawsuit. This is the second one. And I don't know exactly where it is, but it's in Miami-Dade. So it must be in Florida. At the Hialeah Gardens School, on Spirit Day, a teen girl dressed in an inflatable sumo wrestler suit ended up having the match go horribly wrong. She was left with severe brain damage after her head repeatedly struck the floor. 15-year-old freshman at the school and her mother late last week sued the charter school and the company that supplied the inflatable suits, which the lawsuit contends are designed for use in, quote, violent recreational sumo wrestling games, unquote. And the owner of Mega Party Events, which rented the suits out, said the girl was outfitted according to instructions from the suit's manufacturer. And this guy, De La Rosa, Adrian De La Rosa, said the suit is fairly safe. We've never had an injury like this. I really hope she's doing okay. The allegations are the school and the company failed to ensure the girl's helmet fit properly during the event last October. She was later rushed to the hospital after complaining of blurred vision, dizziness, nausea, and headaches. And apparently,
I remember, like I said, the only time I was and like I didn't wear it. I was at this event at Lock Haven, and this was back in 1998, and they had people doing the sumo suit thing. And the event, I guess, the only people that like, volunteered, like the one guy, he was like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Road Trip, but he was like, he kind of looked like a shorter version of the nerdy guy, Kyle. And he was like flipping out. Like, if anybody looked at their helmet, it was like designed to look like a casino wrestler's hair would pull back in the ponytail. If they came off, and like, you know, you're dealing with a bunch of 28-year-old college students. You know, they don't give a shit, especially the couple of the guys that I got friends with. This one guy, called Spongy, he gets like the one real cute girl and like kind of wrestle with him. And like, you knocked her over the one time, and we're all like, oh, Spongy, you dick. But then like, you let her knock him over, and then you're like, yeah, okay, Spongy, there you go. Let the girl give you the big splash now, real smart. We see how you're rolling. But anytime somebody's helmet came off, like these people, like the kids didn't care. They're like, ah, yelling at you. Like this nerdy kid, like he was getting all fired up, and he was like, yelling, put your helmet back on. I'm like, fuck you, you nerd. You know, we'll give you a snack.
Well,
like, it's a serious shit, you know?
Exactly. Well, we've got to welcome Psychic Tom to the show here. Tom, I'm sure you've been listening to us talk about this sumo wrestling match here.
Yeah, I didn't know sumo was that violent. You know, I guess it has a history of, in the samurai days, it was a little different than it is now, but the modern version doesn't seem to be that violent, but go on.
Well, I think it sounds like it probably did not happen on a mat. It was probably on a gym floor or something. It does mention a mat, but I don't know if there was one involved in this case. But apparently there was a case in 2007 where a Colorado woman sued the makers of another inflatable sumo suit after she fell and suffered brain damage during a company retreat. She got $2 million in damages. So
Unbelievable.
I guess we need to volunteer for a sumo event and pretend to get hurt.
Yeah, and get injured. Good idea.
Get the Fighting's Unlimited Startup Fund.
You know, while we're on that topic of sumo, I just love the referee's uniforms on sumo. I always wanted to get one just in traditional garb and then walk into my local biker bar. But I'd get some service then, wouldn't I? I wouldn't be in the back of the bus at that point. Yeah, that I'd command some respect then. Oh, boy.
Well, you know what I always thought was funny? Like, the ceremonies they did before, like, the match. Like, they get in there and they, you know, square off and they pick the leg up and do the stomp. Pick the other leg up and do the squat. Then they put their hands in the knees, they squat down. Then they go up and they turn around and take a handful of salt and throw that to the crowd. Then they get up and they do it again and they'd stomp and they'd squat. Then they get up and throw more salt. I'm like, Jesus Christ, it was like 5 minutes for an introduction and then you assume that there was like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Like two big elephants charging into each other. Boom! And then it was like, and then we belly bump, and then one of them either fall over, or they grab each other's underwear, give each other the big wedgie, and the first one to push it over had a circle wins. I'm like, okay, works to me.
And the Japanese take that. The Japanese really take that serious. I mean, that is intense action over there. And it's never panned out in the UFC. We've had a few that have tried it. UFC 3, there was a gentleman, Emmanuel Yarbrough, an American sumo wrestler, and he weighed in.
Emmanuel Tiny Yarbrough, what is he, like 6'8", like 780 pounds or something?
No, 606. he just couldn't take a punch. Well, this was back in 94. This is in the early days, so maybe he gained after that if he was weighing past 7, but he was weighing six and change for this one. And he got hit twice, and when he went down, he was a turtle on his back. He just couldn't seem to move. And then there was another one at UFC 9. This was a Japanese sumo wrestler, and he fought a guy that was about my size, and the same thing happened. They weren't ready for the punches, so... Sumo hasn't worked out too well in MMA for what that rant's worth.
No, and like I said, I remember the one video with Emmanuel Yarbrough. I remember reading a newspaper article on him, and this was Eagles had offensive line at the time. It was around 6'8", and they were like, "Oh, do you think anybody?" And because he was from like. Somewhere in the States, and they're like, "Oh, do you think anybody in the NFL could ever make it as a sumo wrestler?" And he picked out like this one guy for the Eagles. He's like, "Well, he's got the height if he like had to do with frame, because this guy was only a very stout 340 pounds or whatever it was." Because Yarbrough was about that height, but he was obviously much, much, much heavier.
All right, well, we've got to get back to the real news here. That was just a filler story. Turned into a main event. Anyway, we got a couple boxing stories. Not really stories, but developments, we'll say. I don't know if you heard this, Tony, but Evander Holyfield will be inducted into the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame. And guess who his presenter is?
Mike Tyson.
I don't know if you've heard, but, yeah, Mike Tyson is going to be giving some biting comments.
he's chomping at the bit, you know. All right, let's stop the comedy.
You can imagine what that conversation must have been like, you know. Like,
I imagine they chewed a few things around. Shut up.
That's pretty crazy. But, you know, they've been pretty good friends. They've been patching things up over the years. And I remember on the show we talked about a story maybe a couple years ago now, maybe that long ago, but Mike Tyson surprised Holyfield at some event where he was selling his barbecue sauce. And I think that was the first time in a long time that they had actually met. And, talked civilly, and then they just kind of developed a friendship after that. So it's not a surprise, but kind of an odd pick, considering, number one, you know, the incident with the biting of the ear, and number two, Mike Tyson couldn't even get through his own induction speech.
Yeah, right.
He's not the most, suave public speaker, so to speak. So.
Well, I think he's improved on that now, though. So I guess we have a Tyson 2.0, a whole new and improved version.
It's not ludicrous. But, yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see what he has to say. He does, if you know Tyson, you know he knows a lot about boxing. And he has been doing that Broadway show, so obviously he has that experience of being up in front of a crowd. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that and see how that goes. Another one I just kind of noticed from looking at Twitter, no real news story, but... Jamil McCline is actually running for Congress in Florida.
Really?
20th Congressional District, I believe. And this came out of left field. I didn't see any news about this. I'm just going through Twitter one day, and I see McCline for Congress. And there's a picture of Jamil McCline. So I guess he's putting his boxing career on hold and trying to become a lawmaker. Maybe he'll... help make some laws to protect some boxers. Who knows? We'll have to definitely keep an eye on that one, see how far it goes. If it gets into the Congress, he could be a big help in any legislation for combat sports, period. We'll see how that goes. I was talking a little earlier, Tom, about UFC 178 getting a new main event.
Yeah, what up? I just found that out today. And there's one part of me that's really looking forward to it, but my first reaction, it had to be just a punch in the gut to Gus. I feel so terrible for him. I mean, you know, he'd put his whole heart and soul into this. And, I mean, it's part of the game. I mean, it's not like his career is over. Now, I didn't get the chance to find out what his injury was. How bad was he hurt?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything either. Doesn't really mention... what happened, just that he was injured in training, so.
Yeah, from what I understand, the trash talk is starting already. Even Jones's daughter is involved in it. I guess he's got her on Twitter sending out some insults, so, going to be some bad blood.
Yeah, and actually, that's kind of funny because we had a little preview of UFC on Fox 12 coming up this Saturday, and they showed... Anthony Rumble Johnson had a big family cookout, and one of the little kids in his family asked him when he's going to fight John Jones. So it's funny, the kids know so much, you know. He said to the kid, "Well, maybe eventually, someday I'll fight him."
No, I think that was a great answer. I mean, if you're in the game, let's go for the top. That was a very good answer.
And, of course, Vitor Belfort has a new opponent, and Chris Weidman. The Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to approve a conditional license for Vitor. So it looks like this hasn't been officially signed yet, but it looks like it's a good deal. The hearing actually aired live on UFC Fight Pass. That's kind of weird, but hey, you got to use that thing for something, right?
Now, there was a thread, and it keeps reappearing on the underground. You know you're into MMA too much if, and then they start saying things like you imitate Harold Clarence Howard in a job interview, and everyone you see on the street, you worry about, you wonder how you'll take them out and what your entrance fees are going to be. And if you're watching that on Fight Pass, you know you're in that category, I think, if you're watching the hearing way too much.
Yeah. As part of the conditions, Vitor is going to have to submit to random enhanced drug testing at the NSAC's discretion. He will only fight in Nevada upon his return, and his return will not come before December 2014. So obviously, you know, the TRT issues are going to have to be way behind. He's going to have to make sure nothing is left in his system for any kind of performance enhancement. And we'll see how he does. But I'm sure that, you know, with this whole framework of testing, he's probably not going to risk a bad result. So we'll see what he looks like as a clean Vitor Belfort, and maybe his tail will fall off now.
Yeah, I was going to say, there'll be some bad blood there with some of these horse comments, so looking forward to that one.
Also, the Nevada State Athletic Commission issued a 2-year suspension and no fine for Chael Sonnen. He actually is required to pay the cost of his drug testing program and the cost of hotel and flight charges for bringing in the NSAC laboratory expert. And also, he's actually been asked to work with the commission on educating other fighters in jurisdiction. That's kind of an interesting angle here. He's going to be the no-drug spokesman, I guess. Or
hey,
he's going
to
go around...
Takes one to know one.
Yeah.
That's it. Takes one to know one.
Going around showing people how to get around the test. That's all. That's his next role. The steroid commissioner of the UFC. So we'll see how that works out, if he tries to come back after that 2 years or not. I doubt he will. But, you know, he's apparently been saying over and over again that he's using all this stuff for his own personal health. Which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, considering some of the stuff he's been on. But it is what it is. And Joe Riggs, back in the UFC.
How about that?
This is a weird one, because Joe Riggs famously left the UFC and ended up in a reality show for Bellator.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of controversy with Randy Couture stepping down from his position with the UFC to pursue this as a coach. And, you know, he gets all the way through this show, beats all the guys on the show, and then now he's in the UFC. So what a waste of time for Bellator to prop this guy up only for the UFC to snatch him back. He's a long-time MMA vet. I don't have his record right in front of me, but it's probably pretty significant. Probably kind of like our recent guest there, Mr. International, Shoney Carter. I would imagine he's got a comparable record to him. But
yeah, I remember. Yeah. I think Riggs holds a win over Nick Diaz.
Right.
And that's going back quite a ways. And I guess they had... They kept going in the hospital. I mean, to show you what a couple of psychos both of them are, I guess there was, Riggs was out in the hallway, and him and Diaz are going at it, and Riggs had a bunch of tubes in his veins, and they're calling security. What a circus. Jeez.
Yeah, I remember that. Fighting in the hospital. Takes a little step
forward. Yeah, that's a very special kind of personality that does that.
I think, I don't know if it was him or somebody else, but there was another thing where he was in Thailand, and he barely escaped with his life because he got into a huge bar brawl, and they had, like, warrants out for his arrest over there. Might have been somebody else, but I thought it was Riggs. Anyway, Mike Rhodes suffered an injury, and so Joe Riggs has been tapped to make a return, and he's going to face Paulo Thiago at UFC Fight Night 51 in September. Main event there is Arlovski versus Bigfoot. Rematch. Bigfoot's over there. Riggs last fought at Bellator 106, taking a decision over Mike Bronzulis to win the inaugural season of Fightmaster. He's also currently on a 6-fight win streak. 10 if you count the ones on the show, dating back to 2011. He had his first stint with the UFC a decade ago at UFC 49. And interestingly enough, he'll still be the younger fighter at just 31 years old.
That just doesn't seem possible.
Oh. 2 years younger than Thiago. 55 fights total in a 13-year career. He has wins over Nick Diaz, as you said, Chris Lytle, and Phil Baroni. I don't know if I'd be throwing that Phil Baroni around like a big but.
Oh, Baroni was quite a terror in his day.
Right. Riggs is also a WEC champion and was a top contender for Matt Hughes' UFC title. And also famous for the hospital brawl.
And what I've also heard that Riggs is probably, if not the best in the game at cutting weight, definitely one of the top five. I understand he can take off weight unbelievably quick, which I don't know what the implications are for his long-term health with that, losing 20, 25 pounds in a couple of days consistently, but he can do it.
Well, that should be good for him. He won't be facing any fines for missing weight. Tito Ortiz, a little bit of a lawsuit situation. John Ibarra, his former trainer, is on the attack, and Tito fired back, I guess. He's got some good backers, Quentin Rampage Jackson, Oscar De La Hoya, Michael Bisping, and Vitor Belfort. This lawsuit against his former trainer began when John Ibarra, a popular MMA and boxing trainer, filed a defamation case against his former ward. In the case, Ibarra has accused Tito of spreading false and damaging accusations about him in the media. Tito allegedly called his former trainer a thief who had taken advantage of Rampage, all of which have been claimed by Ibarra as false and have seriously damaged his reputation in the fighting community. Ibarra also initially filed a case against Rampage Jackson, and accordingly, I guess, where Jackson also called him a thief and a liar by accusing him of allegedly making $30,000 in camp money disappear. Rampage reportedly filed a cross-complaint and said he and Ibarra had agreed not to sue each other when they ended their training partnership. Rampage's lawyers said Ibarra took out of context certain comments made by their client. Tito responded by submitting to the court a witness list containing names of people who have trained with John Ibarra in the past. This is on top of a sworn declaration clarifying that his comments about Ibarra were just an example of the trash-talking that is common in MMA and were not meant as defamatory. While no explanation has been given as to how the star fighters were actually helped in the Tito Ortiz lawsuit against the former trainer, it's likely they will support the comebacking fighters' claims about how Ibarra took advantage of fighters in his training. So, that's kind of interesting, but, you know, when you get a defense to defamation, you don't want to just say that's just trash talking, because that's not a defense. If you're going to have a defense, it ought to be something, well, that's just my opinion, because opinion is protected by the First Amendment. So, a little tip for Tito Ortiz if he's listening. Trash talking, that's really not going to help you. Unless you're, you know, prefacing your remarks with, hey, this is just a little trash talk, but this guy sucks. And probably not a good excuse. And going a little off track outside the combat sports realm here, the NBA offseason is underway, and a lot of players are, you know, doing different workouts. San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan, is making the most of his free time, and he's actually doing mixed martial arts as part of his off-season training. And I don't know if he's doing sparring and all that, but it looks like he's doing everything with the pads, the gloves, and all that, and training right out in the street in a parking lot somewhere in the picture.
Wow.
There.
Yeah, I know another NBA player, Mike Miller, who just signed with Cleveland. He was with the Miami Heat, and then I think last year he was traded from the Heat. But, yeah, they move around so much. But I know he was training pretty intense, I guess, in the off season. But you're right, they'd have to be careful about the submissions.
And This is also something that's been done by a lot of NFL teams doing this. I know that Teddy Atlas works with the Jets. He had a big thing on ESPN Friday Night Fights once where he went to the Jets facility and worked with them on boxing for their hands. You know, for the, especially with the linemen, you know, they got to be good with their hands to throw guys off of them and stuff. Hand-eye coordination is good for receivers, running backs, the whole deal. So, you know, combat.
And the necessary good left hook to the ear hole.
Yeah. in case you do have to throw off the helmets, you know, it's good to have a little good hands. Not so much as in hockey, but definitely sometimes it happens. Even though you might get a penalty or a fine. Definitely happens. But it's also been used, MMA in particular, as a method for helping combat veterans with PTSD, which a lot of people will be like, what? How does that make sense? You know, you're going from fighting to fighting, but, you know, sport fighting is a lot different from fighting for your life in the last.
Oh, yeah. A little bit.
And if you remember that, Mike Pyle was killed by a guy who was also experiencing PTSD, and they brought him to the gun range. The guy turned.
Yeah.
Mike Pyle, the sniper there that wrote a big book about, big bestseller about the sniping game. Well, actually, not really a game, but more like a skill, I guess. Anyway. So. Good for the combat sports, getting a little bit of exposure outside the actual ring and cage there, other sports. We got some boxing news here from Macau. Zhu Shiming had a pretty interesting fight over there to get his fifth win in a row in the pro ranks in Macau. Went the distance, 10 rounds against a guy not too many people expected to give him any trouble, Luis De La Rosa. Shiming really ran away with it by scores of 99-91 twice, 97-93. He was always in control, but definitely did not look absolutely unbeatable. His opponent pretty much came in there with guns blazing and showed a lot of good defense and kind of tested him a little bit. So we can expect probably a little bit of a break from that caliber of competition before Shiming is going to be challenging for a big championship belt. Guillermo Rigondeaux knocked out his opponent, Saad Luknong Yantoy, definitely butchered that one, for the WBA, WBO junior featherweight title, knocked him out in the first round, and he was using his head, literally. Because started off with a headbutt. The guy went down after a couple punches. Actually, what happened was Rigondeaux moved in early in the fight from a southpaw stance with a stiff jab and a right, and then he was ducking after a counter punch. And it was his opponent that hit him with the headbutt. Landed flush on Saad's temple. And the Thai challenger got up quickly, but the ensuing attack, while he was still out on his feet, was too much for him to handle, and the referee halted the bout when barely half a round had been completed. So, tough loss for Luknong Yantoy. But what happens? You use your head in a bad way. Also, Gilberto Ramirez got a first-round knockout against Junior Calipo, super middleweights. Ramirez moves to 29-0 with 23 KOs. Calipo goes down to 20 wins, 2 losses, and 2 draws with 7 knockouts. Brian Deloria, Hawaiian Punch, knocked out Jose Alfredo Zuniga. Flyweights had their fight over the weekend. Valoria moves to 34-4 with 20 knockouts. Zuniga drops to 11-6-1 with 5 knockouts. Have a little help from some body punches, according to this little article here. Let's see. And it looks like Valoria will be going for yet another belt, and his presence in an undercard featuring such an unbeaten local like Shiming, I believe that we could see them in a vacant title fight sometime soon. Mercito Desta also had a knockout over the weekend in the 8th round against Luis Arceo. A lightweight fight. Gesta goes up to 28-1-1 with 16 knockouts. And Arceo drops to 28-13-4. And Emmanuel Robles goes to 11-0-1 with 3 knockouts over Jonathan Chicas, who's 13-2 now with 6 knockouts. And it was a split decision over 8 rounds. He won on 2 cards by 1 point, 76-74. And Chicas got the other card by the same score. Heavyweights were also in action over the weekend. I don't have the first names here, but Tyshawn versus Alex Rosman. I guess this is one of those guys who only has one name. Tyshawn is doesn't have his record here, but looks like he knocked out Alex Rosman, who's 2-7, 1 KO. So not too big a deal, but he's a 7-foot-tall Chinese guy, Tyshawn. Tough to do.
My dad was really counting this, guy. He didn't just see him. He was hitting guys. He was backing that guy with a jab. He was backing guys up. I said, Dad, what was the quality of fighter he was against? And I said, I remember early in Nikolai Valuev's career, I said, he did the same thing. You know, he was just so huge, just overwhelming guys. But then when he got in there, you know, with guys that were a little bit more talented, he really looked out of place. And I said, Dad, I said, I didn't get a chance to see this guy. And I said, he could be the real deal. You know, I don't know. Or he could be the next Primo Panera.
Also, I forgot to mention that Shiming, Zhu Shiming, is actually trained by Freddie Roach. So, it tells you a lot. But, just a little bit more detail. I left out De La Rosa, his opponent there, was fighting out of a really tight defense with gloves high by his head and his elbows tucked in, which Freddie Roach would probably appreciate. He also had really fast hands, and he hit Shiming more than he'd been hit in his previous 4 professional fights. And he also absorbed an accidental headbutt that opened up a constant bleeding cut over his left eye. And he still took Shiming the distance in the first 10-round fight for the Chinese national. And unbelievable. Pretty good effort on his part. And according to this piece, Shiming looked more like a professional boxer than we saw in his first 4 fights as well. And Roach said that he worked hard with the Chinese fighter to sit down more on his punches, even though there's still kind of a debate about how much power Shiming actually has. A lot of his loaded punches didn't really have much of an effect on his opponent. But, of course, the Colombian opponent there could just have an exceptional chin. But all in all, it was a good night for Shiming. Fans got what they wanted for. Freddie Roach saw some improvement. It's good for everybody. Now, I'm sure you know what The Rock's famous wrestling slogan was. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking, right? Remember that?
I do. What? Know me, I'm a wrestling nerd.
Well, do you smell what Ronda Rousey's cooking? That's the question now, because Ronda Rousey wants to be the female Rock, and that's not to say she wants to marry The Rock. But she is talking about actually developing that kind of a movie portfolio that The Rock is famous for, even though he goes by the name of Dwayne Johnson out there in Hollywood. She's actually going to be in The Expendables 3, coming out August 15th, with a cast of characters that pretty impressive. Wesley Snipes, Sylvester Stallone, Jet Li, and Jason Statham.
How did Victor Ortiz get in that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm not going to maybe just because of that.
He's probably just friends with somebody who's in it, or knows somebody who's part of it. Production somehow.
Yeah.
And either that, or maybe he actually saw some kind of a notice, people looking for extras. He signed up.
Maybe, I don't know.
So he was a shoo-in. But anyway, Warner Brothers is also trying to acquire the rights to something called the Athena Project, which I think is kind of like this movie that's coming out now. About the woman that has access to 100% of her brain, Lucy. It's kind of like that, like a superwoman type of deal. So that's probably going to spawn some sequels and make her a real star if that turns out to be a big one. But Rousey says she kind of wants to be a mix between The Rock and Mila Jovovich.
When you were first saying that, I thought you were going to say she wants to be a corpse human, The Rock and Millie Vanilli.
Yeah, she wants to lip sync all her lines. But actually, it was her agent who kept telling her, you're going to be the female Rock. And that's when we start to believe it could be a reality. She says, I don't half-ass anything. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it the best in the world. Do it to be the best in the world at it. A lot of actresses appear in action movies, but there ain't any female action stars. I love Angelina Jolie, but it's about believability for me. Mila Jovovich is one of my favorite actresses. The Fifth Element really opened my eyes, and the Resident Evil franchise was amazing. So definitely a mix of Mila Jovovich and The Rock is what I'm going for. People love chick fights, they love tough, empowered women, and there is a demand. People just don't know it. Her walk to the cage in her last fight took longer than her last two fights combined. George St. Pierre was in the cage longer against Johnny Hendricks than Rousey has been in her entire professional career. And on Wednesday night, she was awarded an ESPY for Best Female Athlete. So, pretty much the biggest star the UFC has ever had, according to Dana White. Well deserving of that. Now, you have to be retarded to not get behind the next story here. We talked about this before. Garrett Holeb, MMA fighter with Down syndrome, says he's ready for a fight, but they won't let him in the ring. Now, we had talked about this before because he's supposed to fight this guy with cerebral palsy in Florida. And the Florida State Boxing Commission apparently wouldn't let it happen. Now they're talking back and forth that the sanctioning party, or was the promoter's fault, according to the Boxing Commission, and the promoter is blaming the Boxing Commission. So they've actually filed suit. Mitch Holeb's father, Garrett Holeb's father, Mitch, talked about the case recently, and he said, ignorance led to a cease and desist letter that's preventing his son from competing in sanctioned events. He said, this is a fair matchup. We think that their limitations kind of offset themselves. And Holeb, his nickname is G-Money, has spent 4 years training at the American Top Team Martial Arts Academy in Weston, Florida. And although his father acknowledged that Garrett has a slower reaction time than most fighters, he said he believes it's all about the matchup. he's not trying to take on George St. Pierre, Mitchell has told today.com. At least not yet. I want to, Garrett. So. Anyway, Holev took on Monster Mike Wilson in a three-round bout back in February of 2013. And Holev went the distance in that fight. And at the end, the ref declared that both combatants winners. The August fight was meant to be a follow-up to Holev's bout in February. And in response to critics who call Mitch Holev irresponsible for allowing his son to fight, the dad replied, "They've never met my son. If they were in my shoes and they did anything different, then I think they'd have to deal with the consequences of not doing what he loves to do." His son said, "My dad's not crazy. They're the ones who are crazy." And believe it or not, the National Down Syndrome Society also has Holev's back, issuing a statement that says the organization stands behind Garrett Holev and his right to compete in mixed martial arts. So, pretty interesting story. Their president from the society says there are concerns that Garrett is being discriminated against based on disability, in this case, Down Syndrome. He's asking for full inclusion and full participation in the sport of his choosing, and we stand behind Garrett and his family as they fight to ensure Garrett can achieve his most dreams and aspirations. If you go on change.org and search for his name, you'll find a petition with over 111,000 signatures trying to get the Boxing Commission to change their stance. Even UFC Hall of Famer Stephen Bonner, who has more than 93,000 followers, put out a tweet in support of G-Money last month. And, according to the petition, last August's fight with Stephen was called off due to a lack of sanctioning by one of Florida's amateur sanctioning organization, the World Fighting Organization. And a spokeswoman for the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation, which includes the Boxing Commission, said that her agency disputes allegations that Holev was singled out because of his Down syndrome. She said the Florida State Boxing Commission was informed that an amateur sanctioning organization was hosting an event and elected not to sanction all of the bouts scheduled for the event. Whatever that means. She said the commission does not get involved in the sanctioning decisions of ASOs, which are amateur sanctioning organizations. As a regulatory agency, we take any occurrences of unsanctioned bouts very seriously. Upon becoming aware of the unsanctioned bout, we quickly took action. In fact, the issuance of the cease and desist notice as a result of an unsanctioned bout was not related to individual participants. Disability rights lawyer Amanda E. Haystack is suing the Boxing Commission and claiming discrimination. One of the individuals who represented the WFO said they serve at the pleasure of the state. They can't do anything out without the state's blessing, she said. So, see how that goes. I have actually signed this petition, so.
Yeah, I have to support him. I mean, why not? If you can perform, great.
And it's not, it's not a situation where if the guy gets hurt, they can't stop the fight. I mean, it's like any other MMA fight.
Right, exactly.
If it was a situation where the guy had a life-threatening illness, I would disagree with the whole wanting him to fight. But, the guy's not going to risk any greater problem. He's not going to, get worse from this fight, no matter how many times he gets hit in the head, they could stop the fight to prevent him from having any further brain damage. All that. That's, of course, possible. I mean,
that's possible for a healthy fighter. We all know that. I mean, you assume the risk and go from there. But that's a very inspiring story. I support them all.
And he looks like he's in shape too. He's the toughest special needs kid as I've ever seen. Tough as looking anyway. I don't think any of the other Down syndrome kids try to steal his lunch, that's for sure. He's definitely got the physique going in addition to the training, so he obviously takes it seriously. All right. Well, we've got pretty much all MMA news left. So we're going to save that so I can throw in some boxing to talk about first. We have, let's see. I know we've got a big Friday night fights card coming up. We've got another Chinese card going on. I'm really big on that card. For Friday, let's see. I'm going to Box Rec right now. We're going to fight in Bangkok, Thailand for the interim WBO Asia Pacific Super Flyweight title. It's the only fight on the card. Only one guy signed up so far. That's pretty crazy. 2 days before the fight. No, 1 day before the fight. Fernando Lumacat, 29-8-3 with 12 knockouts, is fighting TBA at Super Flyweight. 12-round match against TBA. So apparently they're going to pick someone out of the crowd. They're in Thailand. Out in California, USA Fox Sports 1, Golden Boy Promotions, has a pretty big card here. We got Frankie Gomez, undefeated at 17-0 with 13 knockouts, taking on Vernon Paris, who's 28-1 with 16 knockouts. I don't know much about either of this, but it's a 10-round light welterweight fight. We also have Ivan Morales, a bantamweight, 25-0 with 14 knockouts, fighting Sergio Frias, who's 15-3-2 with 8 knockouts. Couple middleweight fights, one light middleweight, one middleweight. Got Juan Matt is 11-1 with 7 knockouts, fighting Angel Hernandez, who's right at 500, 16-16 with 1 draw, 13 knockouts to his credit, 7 knockout losses. Then we have Terrell Gausha, undefeated at 10-0 with 5 knockouts, fighting Ronnie Warrior Jr., who's 15-8-1 with 5 knockouts. Card there. And we've got, here it is, ESPN 2 Friday Night Fight. It's going to be in Chicago.
With the winner getting a deep dish pizza.
Welterweights Roberto Garcia and Bradis Prescott. Main event there. Garcia is 35-3 with 23 knockouts. Prescott is 27-5 with 20 knockouts. Also on the card, Caleb Truax, who is 23-1-2 with 14 knockouts, and Derek Ennis, who is 24-4-1 with 13 knockouts.
I've covered a few of Derek's fights. I've had a chance to speak to him on a few occasions. Good fighter, good skills, quick hands, decent power, soft chin.
And most of the other fights are, people with less than 10 fights to their credit. There is one fight, light welterweight, Jamie Sandoval, 16-4-2 with 12 knockouts versus Aaron Stedman, 10-5-1 with 6 knockouts. That's kind of farther down the card, but another interesting one, a guy from Massachusetts here, or one state down from here, Paul Gonzalez, who is 7-3 with 3 knockouts, will be taking on Mike Lee, who's 12-0 with 7 knockouts, and probably most famous nowadays for his appearances in the Subway commercials. But he hasn't fought in a while, I don't think. That's his record.
Are we sure he has enough? Because if you look at it, I don't want to call it a hypothetical question because it's definitely happening. I want to ask a question that needs a lot of explanation. I've been watching this sport for a lot of years now. This one puzzles me. It baffles me. It confuses me. First of all, where's Latvia at?
Latvia.
Latvia, wherever.
I want to say it's somewhere between Germany and Russia.
Okay, works for me. So, now here's my question. The fight there on Saturday. I'm not going. The fight is between Roy Jones, who's from Pensacola, Florida, and a guy by the name of, I think it's a guy, by the name of Courtney Fry, who's from the United Kingdom. Jones is 57-8, 40 knockouts. Obviously, he's well past his prime. He's 45 years old. Courtney Fry, who's 39 years old, is 18-5 with six knockout wins and two knockout losses. He's coming off two losses in a row. His last loss was to a four-round decision to a guy that was 13-22. They're fighting over in Latvia for something called the World Boxing Union German version cruiserweight title. Now, my question is, how do you have a fight in Latvia between an American and a Brit for a German title?
Yeah, exactly.
I demand answers.
I don't know. The first thing coming to my mind is the people in Latvia would love a chance to see a Hall of Fame fighter live. Maybe they haven't before, and the money talks.
Yeah, it could be. I just invented a belt. You know, that's cool. Hey, what's for me? I've seen crazier.
All right. I have consulted the Google Maps guru here, and Latvia is between Estonia and Lithuania, if that helps you any.
Okay. Now, also on Saturday, we got Danny Williams fighting. I'm confirmed this is the same Danny Williams. I believe it is. Yet from the United Kingdom. He is one of the last fighters to fight Mike Tyson. When Tyson was one of the last few legs, it was Tyson's second to last fight. And in four rounds back in 2004. Tyson's knee went out in like the first round. He parlayed that fight into a beating from Vitaly Klitschko when he got knocked down like five times. And Danny is still going at it at 41 years old. He's fighting the Ever Dangerous TBA. He's 46-22, and he's coming. Number one round, but with 27-1. So, I mean, go figure, right? But the really interesting fight of the weekend, the one that I want to really talk about, I mean, we got a fight card in Germany. Robert Stieglitz is fighting on there versus Sergei Kamitsky. Let me just quickly just throw their records out there at him. Stieglitz, who's basically been going back and forth with Arthur Abraham, coming off a 12-round loss, 46-4, 26 knockouts. He's fighting Sergei Kamitsky, 29-10, with two draws, 12 knockouts. Vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Middleweight title. Just another piece of tin that he's going to carry around. But the one that I'm interested in this weekend is, where the hell is it? New York at the Garden. Madison Square Garden. And we got HBO doubleheader. And the main event is the destructive Gennady Golovkin, Triple G, 29-0, 26 knockouts. The last person that gave a distance with him was, see how many fights you go that way. Yeah, see, somebody went the distance with him back in 2008. The one back in 2008. Oh, wait. See, nobody has gone in 6 years. He is going in front of Daniel Gill, a tough Australian fighter who's 30-2 with 16 knockouts. Recently, I'm reading his record right now. First, my computer wants to. Okay, here we go. My computer stops cooperating, and he's never been stopped in his two losses. So now it's okay. His last loss, he lost one about a year ago, split decision with Darren Barker. and he lost a split decision to Anthony Mundine. He eventually lost to Mundine, and then he had a fight stoppage back in February with Garth Moore. So, you know, he's stepping in there, going to take the fight to Golovkin. And it'll be interesting to see how he does against this human wrecking machine. Also on the card is a very interesting fight. Up-and-coming Philadelphia heavyweight, Brian Bye-Bye Jennings. And Jennings got, you know, lucky with the way he became, you know, his first union with the public. He was the main event of the first NBC Sports fight card back about 2.5 years ago at the what's now called the 2300 Arena in South Philly. That for the original main event got scrapped. So they grabbed a former guest of ours, Maurice Byram, and undefeated. They put him in there against Brian Jennings, also undefeated. Somebody there's got to go. And Byram was the bigger name. He was the bigger puncher. He was the heavier guy. And he was the guy who fought Evander Holyfield. So he had the name recognition coming in. But Jennings is a good fighter. And Jennings was a sharper puncher. Jennings went out there, out-conditioned them, out-worked them, and ended up winning that fight in 10 rounds. And had Byron hurt a few times. Jennings parlayed that fight, and he's gone on. He's had a couple fights on NBC, a couple impressive knockouts. His last fight was... I believe it was on HBO card back in January against a tough, undefeated Arthur Spiekwa. And they went back and forth. He knocked him out in 10 rounds. So we were talking about a fighter that, for a while, wasn't really seen as a big puncher. He had about 14 wins and only about six knockouts. He's now up to 18-0 with 10 knockouts. And he's won his last four fights by knockout, and five of his last six by knockout. Beat former title Sergey Lahogic, really beat him up pretty good. Had Steve Collins, I mean, he really put a good shellacking on him, had him down. So this is a fighter that's really picking it up. Now, his opponent is also undefeated, Mike Perez. And we all remember Mike Perez, who was in that fight a few months ago that ended up very tragically when he had fought Magomed Abdulsamed. And, you know, Abdulsamed is still recovering and is, you know, permanently injured from that fight. So after that, he takes a fight 2 months later against Carlos Takam. And Carlos Takam, who was, you know, came in, you know, unheralded. He was 29-1 at the time, but nobody knew who he was. And the first round, Perez was really, you know, slapping him around pretty good. And he's like, okay, this fight's a mismatch. And this Takam really is overmatched here. But Perez couldn't find the killer instinct. And next thing you know, Takam is really starting to bust him up pretty good. And a lot of people thought Carlos Takam won that fight. And Perez was lucky to escape with a draw. If he now, it could be a situation where Takam was better than advertised. You know, he's since had a decision win over former title challenger Tony Thompson, and then he dominated the whole fight almost. Or it's a situation where maybe Perez isn't mentally in it anymore, and maybe every time he hits or he gets in there, he sees Mago basically looking at him, and that can really screw a guy up. And this is a chance for Brian Jennings to really step past him, grab that brass ring, and set himself up for a title shot.
All right. A lot of fights this weekend. Pennsylvania. Boston, too. Let's see, we got... We haven't even talked about Gennady Golovkin yet, have we?
Yeah, I just did.
Oh, okay. That was the main event. Okay. Yorgi fighting this weekend.
Yeah, I do know Harry was, working out there getting some tickets sold. I haven't had a chance to talk to him.
Tony, is this Harry's first fight since last year?
That's a good question. I'll look at that right now for you and let you know. So we had the two fights back to back. Let me find it. Okay, he's fighting. What if that's the same Eric Mitchell who used to train at my gym? I'm going to look that up here. And yes, Tom, you're right. This is his first fight since we went to see him last June. I know he had something else that I think was scheduled for the fall, because I remember he was really hawking the tickets and his father was getting into it. And then it fell apart. And it was right around Thanksgiving. Because I remember I couldn't go because I was going away the next day. But he was really trying to get the tickets off, and he was, really hyped up for it. And then his opponent from England was pulled out of the fight, which was a shame. I remember he was really down on that. So I remember sending him a message. Now, the guy he's fighting this weekend is a guy by the name of Eric Mitchell. And Eric Mitchell is a Philadelphia kid. He's 44 years old. I shouldn't say he's a kid anymore. He's 44 years old. I knew Eric and his brother Aaron, but I never knew him well. They used to train out of my gym in South Philly. But everybody used to always say about them, they always called them gypsies. Eric and Aaron, they were like gypsies. Like they would jump from gym to gym. They were always together. And the twins. He won criticism. The guy who was very critical of both of them was Steve USS Cunningham. Because I remember Steve saying in the interview, and then he even talked about it because I brought it up on our show the first time we had him on back in 08, I believe. And one thing Steve didn't like was Eric Mitchell goes by the nickname Murder. Aaron Mitchell goes by the nickname Homicide. Now, as Steve said, you're trying to project an image and everything, but these are guys that one time, they were at the gym, and they had an altercation with one of the trainers, and one of them wanted to go outside and grab a gun. These were not good people. These were not good role models. They were not guys like Steve USS Cunningham, who wants to go out there and portray an image of, working hard, being faithful, being very religious, and being very honest. These guys wanted to play more of that thug life image. And I remember Steve came out and flat out said it. And he said it in interviews. He goes, what are these guys trying, what message are they portraying to the youth of, America? And he's 100% right. So even though I trained at the same gym with these guys for a while, I can honestly say I've probably never spoken more than five words at a time to him.
Well, we have to wish Harry.
They both had a lot of talent. They both had a lot of talent, but they squandered it. They squandered it because of bad attitudes. They squandered it because, nobody wanted to work with them. And this was a guy that, right now, I said I don't have his brother's record, but I have his. And he's 23-11. He has 11 knockouts. But we're also talking about a guy who's only won one fight since 2008. He had disqualified a couple stoppage losses in there. And if Harry's sharp, I think Harry will take it to him.
Yeah.
And he's the same brother that I'm looking at right now that's fighting Harry. 10 years ago, I fought with Cordell Mayorga, when Mayorga was pretty much still at the top of his game, and all he wanted to do was clinch. Every time Mayorga got close to him, he held on. He just held on.
Well, we got lots of other boxing matches to discuss. Also, the Showtime card on the weekend. Actually, I think it's Friday night. Showbox. So they've putting stuff all over the blog on this one. They've been really hitting this at all sides from the media perspective. Main event, Antoine Douglas, 14-0 with 9 knockouts versus Michael Soro, 23-1 with 13 knockouts. For the vacant WBA International Middleweight title. Then we have super middleweights Jerry Odom and Villier Quinones. Odom is 11-0 with 10 knockouts, and Quinones is 8-0 with 5 knockouts. That's for the interim WBC Feaker Box super middleweight title. Whatever the heck a Feaker Box is. But also, Cecil McCullough is undefeated at 18-0 with 6 knockouts, fighting an 8-round welterweight fight against Oscar Godoy, who's 13-2 with 6 knockouts. And our former guest, Tony Luis, 17-2 with 7 knockouts, fighting Wanzel Ellison, who's undefeated at 11-0 with 1 draw and 5 knockouts, to his credit. And this kind of looks like the mismatch of the week. By the way, it's Jorge Diaz, 17-3 with 10 knockouts, fighting Ramon Ellis, who's 4-11 with 2 draws. But not too bad of a fight. I know we've got a Jesus fight in the week coming up a little later.
Always.
Always a Jesus fight. Okay. Argentina fights here, Australia, nothing good there. Okay, page 2, finally. And that fight, that Harry Joe Yorgi fight, is in Wissamayong or something like that? Never heard of it. Pennsylvania, though.
Oh, why missing? Yeah, that's close to Reading, Pennsylvania. Which, of course, I'm talking to people who don't know where that is. That's about an hour or so outside of Philly.
Okay. Well, Brock, I have to say the freeze on me now. Son All right, well, I'm waiting for Box Rec. I guess we could preview the weekend UFC on Fox 12 card. Robbie Lawler versus Matt Brown in the main event. It should be definitely a candidate for fight of the night. Lawler is just unbelievable brawling skills, and Brown is just getting better and better every fight, so...
You know, I'll go you one further. Maybe we could say fight of the month or possibly even fight of the year, depending on how it goes. This could have some real firework. And you said fight of the night. Okay, I'm thinking the baton. I mean, of course, you know, to steal that old Larry Merchant saying about the theater of the unexpected, we never know for sure. Even the psychic man doesn't. But this one is just so intriguing because on paper, this is Robbie Lawler's fight to lose. If you look at the quality of opposition, the experience factor, everything else you put together, he should win this. Having said that, Mike Brown is just on a tear, and it's been a while since I went out on the limb and picked an underdog, but I think my money would be on Brown. I think the last I knew, Lawler was -300 and Brown was about +250. So I think Brown would be worth a fling on that. Now, the interesting thing in that first round, who's going to back up first? That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, I think Matt Brown is just in the zone these days, and it's going to be really tough to beat him. But at the same time, Robbie Lawler is always improving himself. He looked great against Johnny Hendricks. Of course, we knew, found out after the fight, that Hendricks was dealing with injuries. So we never know how much that affected in that fight. But, you know, if this becomes stand-up war, I definitely would go with Lawler.
I think he has the power edge, but Brown has that indomitable will about him. So it should be interesting. Now, Lawler, if you think about it, he's really resurrected himself. I remember from his early days in the UFC, he had that kind of almost a Tyson aura about him. And then because in the small shows, he was just destroying people. And he was with the Militants team back then. And then Nick Diaz knocked him out, which was a shocker. And he wound up getting cut after a few more fights and then did just build himself back up again. And right now he seems better than he has ever been. So it's going to be a great fight.
It's going to be better than the one I'm watching right now. Muhammad Ali versus Chuck Wepner. Oh, he's out.
Hey, that inspired the last two movies.
Yeah, he just got knocked out. All right, so we also have, as we mentioned before, Anthony Rumble Johnson. He's fighting Antonio Rogério Nogueira. So obviously, you know, that's a big stepping stone for Johnson as he wait. And we'll see how he does there. I like Johnson in this one, but I'm really going to see if Nogueira has anything left if he wins. He wants a title shot if he wins this one. So definitely a big deal fight for both guys. Now, the other, I would definitely pick Johnson in that one. I definitely pick, I'd go with Tom and pick Matt Brown in the main event. But this next one, I really don't know who to pick because as much as the fans and I appreciate Clay Guida for his antics and his character, I just don't know skill-wise if he really can compete at the high levels anymore. He seems to change his style every time he gets in the cage. He does a lot of movement and less fighting than he should sometimes. And this guy, Dennis Bermudez, has been on an absolute tear since he was on The Ultimate Fighter. 13-3, and I don't even think the guy who beat him in The Ultimate Fighter could repeat that performance against this Dennis Bermudez.
Just let's answer your question there, Rich. How do you see Guida winning this fight, if you do see him winning this fight? I mean, I don't think he has the power, and I don't think his ground skills are good enough against Bermudez. So we're looking at maybe a decision win. What do you think?
Yeah, he'll have to use his wrestling. I mean, that's his greatest strength, I think. And, you know, he doesn't really have power with his striking. I don't remember the last time he knocked anybody out.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he works at Jackson's. He works out at Jackson's camp there. So he should be getting the best training possible. But this Bermudez guy is in a whole different category. He's younger.
Right.
He's hungrier. And I just don't see Guida winning unless he just goes for takedowns the whole time and ends up being able to hold Bermudez down.
Or just tries that stick and move strategy that he unsuccessfully tried against Gray Maynard. And if some judge would be...
because, you know, looking back at that fight, I really thought that Clay did enough to win. Even though I didn't like it, it wasn't an entertaining fight, but I thought Clay landed the better shots. And you know, apparently the judges just didn't like all the running.
Yeah.
But he changed that style since then, so... We also have Josh Thompson fighting Bobby Green. Both of them have pretty decent records. Thompson's 26, 21, 6 losses. Bobby Green is 22-5. Jorge Masvidal, 26-8 versus Darren Chang, 15-4. Kyle Kingsbury, 11-5, fighting Patrick Cummins, who's 5-1. We got Tim Means, has 20 wins, 6 losses, 1 draw, fighting Hernani Perpetuo, who's 17-4. Mike De La Torre, who's 12-4, fighting Brian Ortega, undefeated at 8-0. Thiago Dos Santos E. Silva, who's 18-4-2, will be fighting Akbar Ariola, who 22-7-1. Wonder if he's related to Cristobal Arriola. Steven Seiler, also on the card. He's 23-12, fighting Noad Lahat, 7-1. Undefeated Andreas Stahl, 9-0, fighting undefeated Gilbert Burns at 7-0. And then we have a female fight kicking off the card, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Definitely not pronouncing that one correctly. She's 6-0, fighting Juliana DeLima Carneiro, who's 6-1. I haven't heard of either of those girls, so I don't know what to expect of them. And we will get to the postcard wrap-up of last weekend's UFC event there. Big UFC fight night in Dublin. We've got Boxrec back now. So let's just see what we got over here. I thought we had it back, but it's not moving. So, as I'm waiting for this to fix itself, might as well talk a little bit about the women's picture there in the UFC. We know that that Holly Holm just got signed. Gina Carano is pretty much a done deal. They just have to iron out some sort of details that the Hollywood lawyer is concerned about. But they keep saying it's close, it's close, it's close. So I would think that they're just waiting for a big opportunity to announce it and get the deal done. So it's looking like a pretty good shot, too, at Carano being the next fight for Rousey, because Holly Holm has said that she's okay with the fact that she's not going to get a title shot right away. She's still recovering from the arm injury, and then the only other opponents possible would be Kat Zingano and Cyborg. And of course, Cyborg hasn't proven that she can make the weight yet. She's got the fight scheduled already at 135, but until she actually fights at that weight, I don't think the UFC is going to book her for anything. So it's probably 1-2, Gina Carano or Kat Zingano.
Good luck marketing those, especially with Gina. I mean, Gina hasn't fought since, what, 2008, 2009 something? Good luck marketing that one.
Well, I think everybody's going to be ordering that with sex appeal in mind more than...
Well, if I wanted that, I'd order a porn DVD. Oh my God! I mean, it's just—I don't know. Maybe I just see the world different, but I just don't see it being competitive. I've been wrong before, so we'll see if Gina can make a fight of it. But again, I mean, her ground game—I mean, her ground game was never really there. And on the feet, Ronda's become a lot better than she was. And even if not, no one's been able to stop her with their takedowns. So I try to just picture these different scenarios of Gina winning. And maybe, she has a puncher's chance perhaps, but I strongly doubt it.
Well, have you seen Gina's last movie? Come on now.
Well, I don't think it's quite that easy.
Well, if she has a good choreographer. Let's see. Getting back to boxing here, we've got, we got a pretty decent card here in the UK, actually. Actually, Germany first. And by the way, Latvia is technically between Germany and Russia. It's actually right. Russia. And I had that card that you mentioned with Roy Jones Jr. I also heard James Toney is on that card, but I don't see him on the box rack.
Yeah, I didn't see him while I was looking on box rack.
Latvia is between Estonia and Lithuania. Estonia is north of it. Lithuania is south. Also borders Belarus and on the other side of the Baltic Sea. And Germany is, let's see, one, two, three countries over. Lithuania, Poland, and then Germany. So I guess I did study in geography. Anyway, over in Germany, we have Danny Williams is fighting, TBA, 46, 22, and 35 knockouts. Fighting TBA on a card that's got nothing else, really. Speaking of mismatches of the week, with a co-main event is a heavyweight fight between a guy named Agit Kabayel, who's 10-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting a guy named Peter Bohm, who's 0-4. So that's a tough one. It's going to have to be a big upset for that guy to win. But over in Sachsen-Anhalt, Germany, on Saturday, we got Robert Stieglitz in action. He's 46-4 with 26 knockouts, fighting a super middleweight bout with Sergey Konitsky, who's 29-10-2 with 12 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBO Intercontinental super middleweight title. Also on the same card, light heavyweights Robin Krasniqi and Oleksandr Cherviak. Krasniqi is 41-3 with 16 knockouts, and Cherviak is 14-3-1 with 4 knockouts. This is for the WBO International Light Heavyweight title and the vacant WBA Continental Light Heavyweight title. What about the Intercontinental title? Remember that from wrestling. We've got Light Heavyweight Dominic Bosol up 15-0 with 5 knockouts, fighting Dan Rigi, who's 22-9 with 11 knockouts. That's for the WBO, there we go, Intercontinental heavyweight title. I was just joking. It turned out to be true. And another fight for a title, Moritz Stahl, 8-0 with 6 knockouts, versus Guram Nachilishvili, who is 7-1 with 5 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBO Youth Intercontinental super middleweight title. If that's not enough, we have a female title fight. Christina Hammer, 17-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Ann Sophie Mathis, 27-3 with 23 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBO female light middleweight title. And that's pretty much it, that main card there. Mentioned Roy Jones Jr. fighting. It's an interesting card there all around. Another interesting fight on there. Dennis Bakhtov, 37-9 with 25 knockouts, fighting Konstantin Erik, who's 21-8 with 17 knockouts, 2 draws. And there's a Guerrero in action this weekend, but it's not a Robert Guerrero. It's a Rodrigo Guerrero, who's 20-5 with 1 draw and 13 knockouts, fighting Takahiro Shigi, who's 11-0-1 with 9 knockouts. That's in Hidalgo, Mexico, for the vacant WBC International Silver Bantamweight title. And on the same card, we have WBA Female Minimum Weight title on the line between Annabelle Ortiz, who's 14-3 with 2 knockouts, and Nisi Torres, who's 12-2-1 with 8 knockouts. And here's your Jesus fight of the week. Of course, also from Mexico. It's a main event from Villa Flores, Chiapas, Mexico. Featherweight fight, Fernando Montiel, who's 51-4, 38 knockouts, 2 draws. Fighting Jesus Rios, who's 30 wins, 5 losses, all 5 by knockout. 1 draw and 24 knockout wins to his credit. So if he loses, it's probably not going to be by decision. Mario Rodriguez in a 10-round minimum weight fight. He's 17-9-4 with 11 knockouts, fighting Junior Granados, who's 12-1-1 with 8 knockouts. Let's see if we got anything else. Had a pretty interesting card out there in the Philippines, in Manila. Nothing too crazy on As far as the main event goes, seems like another mismatch. Dodie Boy Penalosa Jr. is 12-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting a guy named Dickie Armturan, who's 3-8. But down the card a little bit, we got a very interesting fight, 10-round featherweight fight between Bernabe Concepcion, who's 32-6 with 18 knockouts and one draw. And he's fighting Eden Sonsona, who's 32-6 with 10 knockouts. And nothing really else jumps out at me in that card. That's pretty much the biggest fight on it. And we to the United Kingdom's Manchester, Lancashire. Billy Joe Saunders, it's 19-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Emmanuel Blandimola, who's 22 with 5 knockouts. That's for the PBU middleweight title. Now here we got a couple guys who are undefeated. And instead of fighting for an international title, like all these other guys are fighting for, have losses. They're fighting for an EBU title. European. Doesn't make sense. The guys who deserve to be fighting for the biggest titles, they're fighting for these shitty ones. Speaking of which, Liam Smith is also on this card. 16-0-1 with 6 knockouts, fighting Jason Wellborn, 15-2 with 6 knockouts, fighting for the BDD of C British lightweight title. Also, Terry Flanagan, undefeated at 24-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting for the British lightweight title. Against Martin Getham, 24-5 with 1 draw and 11 knockouts. So those are the title fights, or the big ones anyway. There is one other title fight. The BBB of C Central Area Light Welterweight title is being fought for with Jack Catterall, 8-0 with 4 knockouts, going against Nathan Brow, 11-0 with 2 knockouts. Also on this card, Tyson Fury, 22-0 with 16 knockouts, fighting Alexander Ustinov, who's 29-1 with 21 knockouts. And Liam Walsh, 15-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Kevin Hooper, who's 15-2 with 3 knockouts at lightweight. And middleweight's Chris Eubank Jr., 16-0 with 11 knockouts, and Ivan Jukic, who's 19-2 with 12 knockouts. We got a whole card going on in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Saturday, where every single opponent is TBA.
Nice.
Every single
person.
Yeah. And let's see, nobody's in the same weight class either. So they can't fight each other. And we never had this guy on a guest, but I know he's fought a guest of ours, or at least somebody I interviewed, Rayco Saunders, fought this guy, Tommy Carpensi. He is fighting in Washington, Pennsylvania, wherever that is. 22-4 is Carpensi with 14 knockouts. He's fighting DeFierce, 27-24-7.
Now, I know DeFierce Smith. DeFierce Smith's a tough Philly fighter. Hasn't had a lot of breaks in his career, but always comes to fight, and he's definitely a spoiler. So if you're not ready, when you step in there, DeFierce can definitely upset you.
And a sort of NEBA USA light heavyweight title. So, I know Carpensi has been in the game for a long time. If he wins that, he's going to get some hardware out of it. We also have Jason Bergman, 23-10-2, with 16 knockouts, fighting Akhoror Moralimov, who's 15-0 with 12 knockouts. That's for the NABA USA heavyweight title. And this guy must be a brother or a relative, because he's on the same card as another Carpensi. Dan Carpensi, 2-0, fighting Rick Morius on the undercard, who's 1-0. And up at the Royale Nightclub, formerly known as the Roxy, in Massachusetts, Boston, Massachusetts, there we have Jason Estrada fighting Steve Lucosa in a main event bout. Estrada has 20 wins, 4 losses, and 6 knockout wins. Lucosa has 8 wins, no losses. That's for the vacant New England Hollywood type. And nothing that great on the card underneath it. It's the longest fight of the night. We've got a bunch, couple six-rounders and a bunch of four-rounders. Nothing huge. Went over the Golovkin card. In Phoenix, Arizona. It's not too great, though. Oh, here's a better mismatch of the week. From Humble, Texas, the main event, Antonio Capulin, who's 12-0 with six knockouts, fighting Aaron Anderson, who's 3-30. Three wins, 30 losses.
Wow. All right, Rich, you're the strategist, and Tony's the, you're the manager, and Tony's the trainer. What do we tell him? Oh, man, 3-30. Good Lord.
Well, you can come out there and say you won basically 8% of your fights.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, it's a little under 500, a little. Like,
yeah.
42% under 500.
I mentioned that Tommy Carpensi fought Reiko Saunders. That was actually his very last fight. In January 2014. Carpensi also fought your boy Chuck Masaccio back in 2009.
Yeah, he did. That was, I think, Chuck's first loss.
For the WBA Fedocentro light heavyweight title. And Chuck was, 13-0-2 at the time.
Yeah.
Pretty tough guy. Okay, so getting back to the UFC, we had Fight Night, McGregor versus Brandao, and what a main event that was. Conor McGregor, you talk about a guy who, last time the UFC was in Dublin, he was in the audience, and this time he's headlining the event, and so obviously it was a very emotional win for him, beating up Diego Brandao, and I'm just going to play his post-fight interview, because it was just very good on his part. Very well spoken.
Gentlemen referee, Leon Robinson's going to stop to this contest at 4 minutes and 5 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by TKO, congratulations to Conor McGregor. He's with Dan. What a performance from your hometown boy. Hear it one more time. Conor McGregor. That's got to feel good. That's got to feel good. Did you expect it to be done that quickly? I mean, you seem very, very calm but calculated. You seem to know exactly what you wanted to do. Was that the game plan or was there any surprises?
No, I don't know. I just felt calm too well. I had a feeling. Like, if I knew if I got the chance to grapple with him, I would try and pass his guard. I would try to advance position. But, I said I was going to put him away in the first round. I put him away in the first round. It would have to be something special to come over here in my hometown and take this away from me. There's not a man alive that can come on this and beat me. I don't think anybody in the building. So, let's have a quick look at the finish. I think we'll look on the big screen. It looked like you caught him with a funny shot early on. And it seemed to take the win, and then you followed up with that beautiful straight left sent into the canvas. For me, that was game set match. You've done there. I felt it's true. I kicked it right. That was sort of made me check myself a little bit, not coming too cocky, but I knew I was the bigger man. I'm the bigger featherweight here than all these people. But at the end of the day, look. What's next for me is I'm going to go backstage, sit down with Mr. Lorenzo Fertitta, toast some five-ass whiskey, and talk about football stadiums next. With all the trash talk, with all the build-up, there's a lot of pressure on you tonight, and obviously this crowd was expecting you to deliver. Did you feel that in coming in? Did you feel the adrenaline? Did you feel that taking effect on your energy at all?
Honestly, my teammates went 3-0 tonight, Paddy the Hooligan Hoolahan. Naked show. Absolutely beautiful Carl Bendlin. An L&L Irish warrior. I mean, you can't beat that guy. You cannot beat him. phenomenal performances. I'm fed up with that. It was a clean sweep for the Irish. Well, I said it last year. We're not here just to take part. We're here to take over.
Well, I'll be sure to see what happens next. Ladies and gentlemen,
so there you have it from his words, and I love that line, we're not here to take part, we're here to take over. Obviously, you know, he's got a little bit of cockiness to him, but he's backing it up. And Brandow, I don't know where he was, but he didn't seem like he was there for that fight. He just had nothing. And I think, you know, the crowd obviously played into it quite a bit. But his skill level is just that much less, I think, than McGregor. Just did not look good at all. But I'm sure he'll be back, you know. It's obviously a big deal for him to take a fight like that on such short notice, so I think the UFC appreciates that. But it only took McGregor 4 minutes and 5 seconds to get the job done. He was very gracious in talking about his teammates, his Ireland buddies there. Cathal Pendred, I guess we know now that you don't pronounce the TH, beat Mike King in a fight that probably wouldn't have gone that way if it was in the United States, I'll tell you that. Because Pendred was on the verge of getting his ass kicked, knocked out cold, and I think just the crowd in general and the fact that the referee probably wasn't from the United States was very sympathetic to Pendred's cause. Let him recover, and he came back and got a rear naked choke on King. And that was the end of the story. 3:33 in the second round, so threes are wild there. And Mike King will definitely be back. He looked impressive leading up to that point to where he just got tired. Just didn't have anything left, and you know, you could just tell by the way he was throwing punches. He dropped all of his adrenaline on the first part of the fight. We also had his other buddy, Patrick Holohan, got a rear naked choke as well in the leadoff fight of the night over Josh Sampo. Neil Seary had some of the best boxing I've seen in MMA in a while, especially at that low weight class. He beat up Phil Harris by unanimous decision. Showed some really smart defense for once. I mean, you know, I picked out a lot of bad examples of defense, but if you want to learn a great example of defense, watch that fight again, Neil Seary versus Phil Harris, because Seary didn't seem to be a bigger guy at all. He seemed much smaller, much less physically imposing, and still was able to execute his game plan to win that fight. We also had Nikita Krylov beating Cody Donovan by TKO in the first round with 3 seconds left in the first round. Trevor Smith beat Tor Trung by unanimous decision. Ilir Latifi beat Chris Dempsey by knockout in the first round, 207. Norman Park beat Naoyuki Kotani by TKO and elbows, round 2 at the 3:41 mark. And Ian McCall beat Brad Pickett by unanimous decision. Gunnar Nelson beat Zach Cummings by a rear naked choke submission, round 2 at the 4:48 mark. And McCall actually now needs surgery on his hand, I think. Had some trouble with his hand last. They seem to have a lot of this. I actually tried to get another Nelson, Dr. Nelson, on the show tonight because I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of these injuries we've been having. And, you know, you've got Ronda Rousey, who didn't break her hand, split her hand open in her last fight. You've got one of the girls from her show, season of The Ultimate Fighter, just broke her hand in the last UFC fight. So it's pretty crazy. And speaking of injuries, Conor McGregor was supposed to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. And the fight was made, and then 20 minutes later, Nurmagomedov went into the gym and blew his... And Dana White said, 20 effing minutes later. That's how he described it. So now it's going to be Dustin Poirier fighting McGregor in the co-main event of UFC 178, where Jones will be fighting Cormier in the main event. Nurmagomedov is 22-0, including a 6-0 run inside the octagon. So, actually, Donald Cerrone was supposed to fight Nurmagomedov. I'm sorry. But McGregor is fighting Poirier. Let's see. What else we got? Dominic Cruz suggested Monday that his return might have been even slower had he continued with a previous course of treatment. This is another thing I wanted to ask Dr. Nelson about. He said his doctors didn't understand MMA enough, and as a result, he had to take his recovery path into his own hands. He said the therapists don't really know what's going on. You have to figure out your own body, and you have to find these people that know what to do. MMA is relatively new, and doctors don't know how to prepare a high-level athlete in mixed martial arts to go back into a fight. So I had to really learn this myself. So he ended up getting a specialist who had him doing body workouts, not just legs, not just upper body, but everything working together. So that gets my brain and my muscles to get back to work for me. As fans may know, he had two ACL surgeries after his body rejected the first one. And he was supposed to have a return bout against interim champion Renan Barão and had to be sidelined after tearing his quadriceps. Said my quad got torn when I was throwing kicks and wrestling and stuff, and it just tore because my leg wasn't strong enough to throw that many kicks. And I went right into a 5-round fight in camp. My body wasn't ready for that kind of workload. He's 19-1, still considered one of the best bantamweights in the sport, and he'll be 29 when he steps into the cage to face Takeya Mizugaki on September 27th, also UFC 178. And UFC 176, originally set for August 2nd at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, was scrapped after world featherweight champion Jose Aldo was injured during training. Had to drop out of his fight against Chad Mendes. Now, UFC Fight Night 47 has been built up to 9 bouts, in part due to the fallout of that event. And 3 potential main card bouts from UFC 176 have been shifted to the Fight Night 47 show slated for August 16th at the Cross Insurance Center in Bangor, Maine. So, might be, according to some experts, Fox Sports 1's strongest offering so far of fights. Headlined by Ryan Bader and Ovince St. Preux, as well as a homecoming bout for 14th-ranked middleweight Tim Boach of Lincolnville. And from UFC 176, there's also going to be a lightweight clash between Gray Maynard and Fabricio Canoz. 2 other bouts are Jussier Formiga, 16-3, versus Zach Makowski, 17-4, and Abel Trujillo, 12-5, versus Ross Pearson, 17-7. I feel like Pearson just fought. Wasn't he just have a big fight?
Against Diego Sanchez when he got robbed out of that decision.
Yeah, that wasn't that long ago.
No.
Also, Thiago Tavares, 22-5, will drop from lightweight to featherweight when he takes on Robbie Peralta, 18-4. And I guess that's pretty much it for the show.
Well, we'll have a lot to talk. We'll have a lot to talk about next week. A lot.
Yes.
I'll get my Mr. Toppin email.
That's true.
Not there.
Need to come up with list of questions.
No, I got a ton of them already. So I'll get those emailed over probably a little bit later tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
Cool.
And
all right, guys.
Big surprise for you, Tom, since we've been having so many boxing guests. We're looking at trying to get Art Davey on the show, the creator of the UFC. And if we don't get him, we'll be getting Sean Wheelock from Bellator, who actually co-authored a book about creating the UFC with Art Davey. So that will be the week after Antonio Tarver, first week of August. So get your questions ready for the history lesson, I guess.
I love it. Love it. But I love the boxing guests, too. I love them all. So everything's
all
right. Good. All right, guys. Let's enjoy everything this weekend. Big weekend.
Right,
talk to you guys next week.
Folks. Hasta la vista. See you next week.